Right, I've got to be quick. I'm leaving for squash in 25 minutes. So I've also got to roll a few doobies for a friend of mine. Right. This is Bonus Shiz, episode 16. I don't usually say what we're talking about, but it's me and Toby. Toby looking very fresh. Will you be able to watch this on YouTube? I mean, we've recorded it over Zoom. So there is video footage. I don't know whether I'll put it on YouTube. Does anyone really want to see us on YouTube? Probably not. Maybe I will. Anyway, if it's up there, you'll be able to see it, but it'll probably be in a couple of weeks. Anyway, this is Bonus Shiz number 16, where we were going to talk about remote viewing and all that kind of interesting stuff, and then we ended up just talking about the sort of system, you know, like the employment system, and you know, why we're not taught how to break out of it at school and that sort of thing. Anyway, it was quite interesting. It was a bit more sort of maybe not it was kind of motivational. Maybe if you're thinking about doing something on your own and you can't be, you're a bit scared, I'm just telling you there to take a risk. Anyway, thanks, bye. Oh, do you hear it say recording in progress?
I love it. It's a dulcet.
Do you hear the lady say it?
Yeah, oh, it's my most intimate interaction with a woman while I'm repairing is recording in progress. I look forward to it twice a week.
I wonder whether, I don't think anyone else hears that, but I have hit the record button for anyone. Well, of course I've hit the fucking record button because you can hear that I'm talking, I suppose. Now, as you'll see, Toby, if you're just listening on podcast sort of audio, you won't see that Toby is clothed today with his hair slicked back, looking quite fresh. I too am clothed. And my hair too is slicked back, not looking as fresh. I'm off the back of 4 chicken tenders. I've got myself a coffee. I've got myself about a litre of water. It's Bonus Shiz, but I can't remember what number it is. I'm going to tell you what number it is. It doesn't matter what number it is, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It is... The fucking number is 16. Is there a relevance to 16?
Yeah, because we started doing Bonus Shiz, I think, about halfway through the number of weekly programs that we've done, because we were at number 32 with Harrison just this week, which is good. So we're exactly
halfway through. Yes. Yeah, that was good, the Harrison thing. I enjoyed that. I was listening to it this morning. I've got up to, because I like to listen back, because when I'm listening, when it's talking, I'm starting to think of things, not I'm drifting off and thinking of other things. I'm thinking about, question, or I'm doing a little search on ChatGPT to see what Keynesianism is. So I typed in while he was talking. I typed in Kane, and the ChatGPT was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, okay, Keynesianism. No, don't know what you're talking about. So I was like, for fuck's sake, what is it? And then I found the spelling. It is Kynes, I believe. And then it did start telling me what it was. By the time I just got the spelling correct, we had moved on to another topic.
Somewhere between Citizen Kane and Alfred Kinsey. I like that. I like that as the hybrid for Keynes. I had to go back over some of my high school economic theory. It was good. It was a blast from the past.
There was no high school economic theory with me. What was that in economics?
We had an economics class that was available to us for your leaving certificate, but I ended up doing politics and law. That was kind of the department thing that I specialized in high school, with social sciences. But economics, I mean, I went over some of their books and they were fun. They were really quite interesting. I mean, it was something I kind of was pissed off that I'd never done, because it kind of made sense of a lot of terms that we see today. I mean, I'm shithouse with money anyhow. You know, you're better with money than I am. I rode high on the dole for a bit and then just wheeled and dealed in cash, baby. And now I'm on workers' comp. So.
Yeah. And making the most of it.
A degree of socialism. Yeah. It's been good.
There's no knowledge of money here at all, really. I don't really know how I've managed to get to where I've got to at 50. I've got all right. I don't quite know.
You've seized the moment. You're like Nike. You just do it. That's the, is the best thing, you know?
Yes.
You've got to be driven.
Yes.
You've got to. The problem is people get lost in theory a lot, and I'm guilty of this, and then we don't practice, you know, good ideas that we might have. I mean, I'm really good at selling some ideas to people or selling them to myself, and then not acting on them. So I think more and more I observe people who've done well for themselves, and like they all have one thing in common, they just fucking do it. So that's what we try to do.
Yeah, you find you find a lot of people, there's a lot of people in the kind of, what kind of movement would you call it? I don't want to call it the sort of awake movement, because that's fucking wanky. A lot of people in the sort of alternative movements that are a very sort of flouncy, floaty, you know, they've got the right, what feels like the right sort of moral code. But for some reason, having the right moral code means in the most part, you have to drop out of normal society, and then you sort of lose. Oh, go off. Why is it not working?
See, what you need to invest in is a small Indian man to fan you with a palm leaf or something like that. That's what I've got just off to the side of the camera right now.
I've got an itchy nose, and it's not a cocaine habit, because no cocaine has gone up these nostrils for nearly 21 years, probably longer. So people are very sort of floaty. Like, I've met a lot of people who I talk to, and then, oh, I've got this idea for this, and I've got this idea for that. And you just think, oh, I'd scale back the idea to something that is sort of realistic, and then just fucking get on and do it. Just get on.
That is the danger of the new agey movement, because people get lost in, and I mean, all sorts of groups have this, but manifesting ideas, they get lost in the visualization state. And one of the things, we may have mentioned it in an earlier episode where I think we were going over the new age trap, is that the unconscious mind, when you speak about something, it can't differentiate between you actually having done that thing and you speaking about it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be said for holding your goals close to your heart and just acting. You know, I mean, I'm very guilty of discussing things at great length and going into great depth and espousing wonderful ideas. But when you actually look at, oh, you know, how much has been put into practice, you're like, oh, my God, that's what I've noticed over the past 3 weeks of getting better. There's a lot of diaries that I've got over, manuscripts, things like that. It's like, fucking hell, I'm looking at the dates on some of them. They go back years. And I can be very good at describing things. You know, I'd make a great life coach. I'd sell ice to an Eskimo.
Why have you never, we weren't even going to talk about this, but this is the joy of the bonus shiz bit.
Oh, this goes into our theme today, I think.
Oh, does it? So, but why take you as an example. Why have you had the ideas and not put them? Because I reckon 87% of people that are listening to this have had ideas, good ideas for things, and haven't put them into practice. Why have you never done
this? I mean, when I look at the past,
and I'm only saying you haven't done it because you're saying you've never done it. I'm not accusing you of.
No, absolutely, it's a good example, and we should speak about what we know and what do we know better than our own autobiography. And I think, you know, speaking autobiographically here, I think a long portion of my life was spent in a bit of an altered state. So first and foremost, try to maintain a degree of sobriety. But on top of that, I think coming back to, you know, when you discuss things at great length and you're a good talker. And we do live in a world where, you know, people like to be a bit discursive. They like to read accounts. We have a lot of social media. But we're spectators, and we become a spectator for our own life, you know? I mean, one of the things that, you know, I think I've said this before to you, definitely in private, I didn't really go into the podcasting world. I mean, of course, I was aware of things like Joe Rogan, and there'd be certain you know, sound bites that people had said to me that might be of interest, you know, TEDx talks, things like that. But I'd always taken a bit of a back seat when it came to podcasts and podcasting, because I found it interesting that one of the commodities that was growing in the modern world was a good conversation, that people would kind of tune into a good conversation and they wouldn't be having it themselves. So you know, and you know, I'm glad, you know, obviously people like, you know, we have an audience out there that listens to Waking World, but I'd hope, you know, one of the effects that we have is to empower people to go out and do this themselves and bring this into their own life. That's one thing ethically that I like to kind of focus on with my words and with my writing and research and things like that, which is, you know, how is this affecting people? Does this give them tools to go into an area and navigate their life better? Because I think for myself, you know, I was very good with theory. I'm still very good with theory, but yeah, the issue that I face is that you can kind of sit back and you can have a lot of ideas and you can articulate them well and you can interact with people and you can have all sorts of things, but then you realize, fucking hell, when it comes down to those precious few hours you have to yourself in the day, you end up distracted. And that could be, you know, the usual distractions with like sexual ideation, sitting around with your cock in your hand, or it could be just simply, you know.
Or Fanny could be a lady.
Exactly. Masturbation's for all. It doesn't discriminate. But I definitely think that you can get high on information. You can get high on all sorts of things. I mean, if I just look at, you know, symbolically, I can remove the cover of my iPhone here and I hold it up for everyone watching it. You can see the apple on the back of that product being bitten into. And I think it's a very good symbol for the smartphone because it's almost like, you know, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which I think is a big part of the imagery there. And a lot of people are going to the esoteric symbolism of Genesis and, you know, Adam and Eve taking a bite of that fruit is that, yeah, you know, they have self-awareness, but in having self-awareness, they have the pain of too much information. And I think that in a way, Apple is kind of hinting at that with the danger of their technology and all technology that's grown out of that. Certainly, we live at a time in human history where we have unprecedented access to information. We're also paralyzed as a result of that. And that's something that I've certainly encountered. I mean, I'm someone who loves learning, loves information, loves talking, but I can literally sit around and realize, holy shit, I've wasted the whole day getting high on information. So that was actually.
But that's good if you can channel the information into something useful rather than just keeping it in your head, which is what you've got here. But things like I'm 20 years ahead of you. And what was I doing when I was 30? I was just kicking illicit drugs on the head. Kicking it on the head?
Yeah.
Or knocking it on the head. Or kicking it when I was 30. Didn't mean I was totally useless before that. But what I've always found, I don't even know why we're talking about this topic, but I think it's important for people that are listening, because there's a lot of people who don't put into practice anything. I'll tell you part of the reason why that is that you don't think you've got a skill set, or you don't think you've got the skills to be able to use as a vehicle to get you to the destination that you want to get to. And what I've found, and I'm not saying that I'm this super successful example. I mean, I've done all right and my lifestyle's pretty good and my family, like I feel like I've succeeded in life, but I wouldn't say, you know, I haven't sold a business for multiples of millions of dollars, but I think I could if I wanted to. And it would mean investing time in maybe some things that I don't want to invest time in. I'm waffling a little bit here. But what I have done is over the years is I don't trust... I have the mentality that I don't want to pay anyone to do something for me if I can learn to do it myself. So like you're saying, you've overdosed on information. You've overdosed on information, academic information, history, occultic information, which is all like wickedly fascinating. What I've done, not saying it's any better, is I've tried to learn new skills for things that can benefit me and my business. So learning how to do web design. Like I taught myself how to touch type when I was in my first job. Didn't go to university. Worked in a fucking post room. I went to a good school. I went to a good private school. But I left before my A-levels. I never did a degree. I worked in like a post room of a big consulting business, fucking delivering posts. And every lunchtime I used to go up and I taught myself how to touch type. And like, that's an example of a skill that I've used now. You know, I'm using it 32 years after I taught myself how to do it, which I think is invaluable. I've taught myself how to use Photoshop so I can do all my own design. I don't have to pay someone to come up with logos and websites and all that stuff. I found my own developers that I engage to create websites. I found my own developers to create apps. I'm not really, I mean, if I could teach myself how to fucking code, I would do it. So, you know, I get an accountant to do my accounts, but I always want to do the stuff myself first so I can make sure, firstly, that maybe the accountant's not missing anything. I know it sounds ridiculous. So I've taught, just through access to the internet and YouTube and all this stuff, I've taught myself these skills, and the skills that I've taught myself have helped me to bring things to life. So when you've got, so someone might think, well, I've got this business idea. How do you bring a business to life? Well, you have an idea, you make it as realistic as possible, you come up with a name, you register it, you get a fucking web page built. And I think, well, wouldn't it be useful if I could design that website myself rather than pay someone else to do it? Because if you're starting a business or you're starting an idea, you don't have money to spend to pay someone else to do it. So I reckon the key to getting yourself out of the rat race, regardless of whether or not you're going to work for yourself, and that should be your aim, based on everything we were talking about with Harrison, you know, you're kept on this fucking bread line, you're kept on this fucking pleb line, and unless you can break out of it, and the only way you're going to break out of it is to work for yourself, almost before you can work for yourself, you need to arm yourself with some skills in some things that you think you're going to need. That's what I would recommend doing.
Absolutely. Before.
Yeah. Bit waffly, but that was,
it's a good summary. And it's like where you can get your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions aligned. That's where you're really manifesting things.
Yeah,
and
on that, is when you have a business idea, whatever it might be, as like you need to create something that brings it to life. So if you've had these ideas in the past, if there was a realistic idea in there that could have made you some money, didn't even matter how much money that was, and you'd have brought it to life with a website-y, brochure-y thing that suddenly becomes real, it's something you can direct people to. Yeah, that just create, it's like you bring it to life, you manifest it, but the manifesting is you bringing it to life. Rather than just being an idea, and if you don't have the skills to do that bit of the bringing it to life, then it's very hard to get it set. Sorry, yes, what were you saying?
No. I completely agree with that, and that complements it very well. This idea of getting your thoughts and your feelings and your actions to align. And oftentimes people can kind of have the first two of those there, but the activity part's the important part. And I think that's what, you know, when you detail your experiences, you know, this is what's important about actually getting out into the workforce. I mean, I spent a great deal of time at universities and I don't regret that one bit. But when I do review aspects of my life, and certainly some of the friends that I made at uni who were really, really good with the course material weren't always people who'd finished high school in the normal way. I remember studying with this one fantastic chap who had decided to go back to philosophy much later in life after he'd qualified in a trade, you know, so he had his income there, and then he sat his stat exam and went back because he just wanted to explore this subject because it meant so much to him. But he had his means out there, and I really, really enjoyed his company because he was a man who was very hands-on, very driven in the, you know, he could operate in the concrete world. But then we would sit and discuss all sorts of abstractions, metaphysics, things like that. But I always thought, this guy's really grounded because he has the means to direct his own life. And I think you're quite right in saying that you've got to summarize or acquire a skill set that gives you a degree of control over what you're bringing into this world. And in a consumerist society where, you know, we're expected just to kind of like be stuffed from asshole to beak with products. You know, the system doesn't always want us to be entirely functional. So it has our academics or our, you know, bookish types kind of living in the realm of theory. And then cut off from that, you have, you know, people very much linked to the concrete world who don't have a lot of abstract thinking going on, and never the twain shall meet, you know, because I think one of the things we've got to remember is your best societies are where your academics, your intellectuals, or people who are interested in things, you know, they work the body as well. And so too do your working class individuals, you know, they have a healthy access to learning. I mean, you look at any of the ancient Greek figures. I mean, take Plato. Plato's name derives from his nickname, which meant broad-shouldered because he was an incredible wrestler. A lot of people have this image of, you know, just a decadent sort of dandy academic, but in actual fact, he was built like a brick shithouse. One of the greatest minds there. And I think this is something that we need to look at, people combining all different areas of intelligence, because intelligence certainly isn't just on one plane. I mean, you've got emotional intelligence, you've got, you know, the grit required to manifest something. You can have people who are good in areas of engineering, but they can't really comment too much on English literature or politics. And, you know, you've got to be, in many respects, a Renaissance figure, you know, a bit of this and a bit of that. And I would much rather have the company and embody the skill to go and do something, work on something. And even if that thing is a bit rough, the product's a bit rough, at least it's there rather than sit back and waste years.
And it might be something that doesn't turn into anything worthwhile, but at least you've gone through the process of bringing it to life, and then you do it again and again and again. I was going to say, because the system isn't set up, then the system doesn't really promote you becoming an employer or a business owner. It's set up for you becoming an employee of a business and getting trapped in the system. And there's nothing about the education system that prepares you for actual life. There's nothing that prepares you about finance, about relationships, about working for yourself, which is the ticket out of the fucking rat race. So they don't want it. They want you to be controlled by an employer, a wider employer. We've said it before. If you're an employee of a bigger business, that business is then responsible for your tax obligations, and you're like COVID. They just have to tell the business. You have to say to your employees they can't do whatever unless they do X. So if you're trapped in that system, the only thing to do is to break out of it, and then, well, I've got nothing, so I can't break out of it, and I've got to pay the bills. For some reason, there's no promotion of helping you as a human break out of the system. You've got to do it yourself. And even as parents, I'm thinking with Florence, how do I set her up? I'm not so fussed about me. Like, it's nice. If I can succeed, that's great. How do I set up my 12-year-old daughter so that she doesn't get burdened with debt, so that she understands what the system is trying to do to her? How can I give her a property, and how can I give her a business? And people say, oh, you should just do what you're passionate about. Just whatever you're passionate about, do that, and then you won't work, a day in your life. You'll just be... No. But the reality is, I've said to her, well, she's passionate about horse riding. Well, that's great, but maybe there's not very much money in horse riding. Isn't it better to do something that maybe you're not overly passionate about, but you can make a decent lucrative career out of, and then you get the free time, and then you spend some of your money on your horses? A horse riding, it gives you that life balance that you want, where you can go and spend the money that you've earned doing the thing that's all right on the thing. So I don't know why the system doesn't help you to get to that point. And you got to take...
Well, I think it's a very good question to have, because when you look at the history of pedagogy and,
the history way... History of what?
Pedagogy, teaching children, teaching, things like that. There's been a lot written about the, Rockefeller Foundation's influence in the US on funding certain methods of education, and John D. Rockefeller's statement that he wants a nation of workers rather than thinkers.
Yeah.
I've come across some fantastic books, certainly that looked at the teaching of philosophy in schools and rhetoric, and how these things were phased out of curricula, over 70 years ago, that there were various approaches to learning that people were exposed to in the 20s and 30s, even if they weren't getting a lot of schooling relative to what we have now. One thing we found with a lot of people who came through that era is that when they did read and write, they wrote very eloquently and they spoke very eloquently. And sometimes these individuals only had schooling up until the age of 15. So my big question was, what is it about the school system then that offered them that opportunity? So one thing that they looked at was that a lot of old school approaches to education taught rhetoric, taught speaking very well. And it wasn't only the elite schools that did that. The other thing to look at, and I did find this quite shocking, that I remember talking with my grandparents how they studied it. Home economics was a big thing. We don't have that today. And both you and I went to pretty good schools. And I've talked with various people who've gone through different systems and did different courses at the boarding school system that I was at. And, no one was exposed to, personal finance. And even the aspects of home economics, at least the way that they were traditionally taught at girls' schools, and I know it's kind of fixed gender roles, but it was like preparation of food, how you go about the pantry. And I think that's something, teach it to young men too. There's a lot of blokes out there, myself included. I mean, right now I'm obviously engaging in a bit of homestay, but as a single, 30-year-old man, having spent a lot of time on his own, you know, one of the things that you want, I mean, we learned the hard way, is, you know, you don't want to be microwaving noodles every bloody night. You want to have a better understanding of, like, right, how am I going to live a healthy lifestyle so I can be more productive? And you learn the hard way. You kind of got to go out and do it yourself and you through trial and error. The other thing to look at, and I've seen this in the Steiner school system, I'm really quite
Florence went to a Steiner for the first 2 years.
Oh, see, that's a bloody good idea. I always thought if I had kids, I'd look at Montessori, Steiner.
Montessori, I think they there was some statistic about, was it billionaires? That, like, the vast majority of them have gone to Montessori schools. I saw that somewhere recently, but I can't remember.
I could believe that because they encourage a very different approach to learning. And one of the things that blew my mind, it varies from Steiner school to Steiner school and Montessori school to Montessori school, was that a lot of these kids had exposure to growing food, interacting with the land, which I think is becoming more and more important. I mean, you know, up until, you know, the 1960s even, and even portions of the 70s, I've talked with various people who said, you know, you still had a connection to the land. I mean, I've talked with people who grew up in the UK in the 1960s, and they would say, yeah, you know, it wasn't uncommon in wintertime, you'd get your fresh vegetables and you'd bury them in the snow outside, you know, your refrigeration. Everyone kind of kept a little garden, you know, you supplemented your diet, even though people were pretty hard up.
Yeah. Wickedly but, important, though, but growing your own food is like a skill that we should all have. The Steiner school, so because we were, you know, obviously that alternative way of thinking whilst driving, you know, BMW convertibles and you know, wearing Adidas trainers, but we wanted her to go to a Steiner school, but I don't know if everyone knows what a Steiner school is. I'm not talking about the ethos or the fucking concept of what Rudolf Steiner was trying to achieve. Well, I mean, just the idea of a Steiner school people will think about, and maybe that people haven't had an experience with it, but you have the same. So the first couple of years is very play-based. There's not a lot of actual academic learning or teaching. It's all creative-based, essentially. But you get the same teacher for the entire period of time that you're at school. So the teacher you have when you start the school is the same teacher, other than kindy, is the same teacher you have in year six or seven or whatever it is when they leave six. Interestingly, the teacher that we had was Pakistani. I think everyone will know what I say if I mean that. And just happened to be, which was a shame, just happened to be an absolute cunt. And I like almost everybody. She was so horrible. Like, we went in one day to, it was, they do like a birthday celebration thing. And we went in and it was like, quietly go in and you go and sit over there and the children will come in. And then at the end, you know, you can leave now to the parents and the kids just play. And we were like, don't you say, oh, hi, how you doing? This is, you know, Florence's mum and dad. Say hello everywhere. And hi, how you doing? Oh, and now they're going. Say thanks, Mr. San. Say bye, bye. None of that. It's so weird as fuck.
Wow. Was this in Sydney? This sound, it's really interesting because I know a lot of the Steiner kids that I've come across, and they always have a very pure heart, Steiner kids. The best schools were always the more rural ones. So I came across those people who went through Steiner education in Perth who kind of went to one that was one just outside of Fremantle. People not familiar with the layout of Perth. It was kind of more south, like a bit more kind of scrub around it.
I've lost you, Toby. Toby, I've lost you. I think the internet... Okay, back. Hold it. We lost you for about 10 seconds.
About
10 seconds. Maybe the old internet connection on your 1987 dial-up connection was a little slow.
Because I know I'm using the ADSL. Your bandwidth has come up on mine as low, but I've been able to follow your dulcet tones the whole time. I'll wind it back 10 seconds. So
really,
what I was saying was
low.
Mine just came up with the indication that mine was low, but your bandwidth, it's more just the display. You've been the Vincent van Gogh painting this whole time.
Oh, yeah.
But I've been following it. Your words have been like, honey, Dale, it's been gorgeous. But I'll wind back for our listeners. So what I was saying was you mentioned your experience of Steiner education in the cities, And I found that where Steiner really shone was in the more rural areas. And it's, again, we are the product of our environment in many respects. And there's a brilliant Steiner school not far from where I normally live around here. That was one of the few Steiner schools, because I knew some of the parents in the area who I became friends with. And I love, you know, we all bonded over the fact that they'd been opposed to the vaccine, that they were homeschooling their kids when the regulations eventually reached this beautiful area. It's a bit like the Shire in Lord of the Rings. It was kind of like the hobbits are finally affected by the war. And what was interesting about this particular school was the people that ran it were real orthodox Steiner teachers. So they had Eurythmy and they taught those classes like in a very kind of hush-hush way. They didn't charge any money for it. They invited parents to learn and they did it on the condition that no parents went and taught that. And also furthermore, that they didn't teach it for money in turn. It all had to be given for free. And they cancelled it actually when they found out that one of the parents was kind of Shylocking them and going out and then taking what they knew and then charging money for it at in another area. And I love that they had that principle about them. They were really hardcore. They built the Steiner school with their own hands. So I believe that the woman who headed it had been in education for nearly 50 years and her husband was a carpenter by trade. And then when the regulations came for the jab on school campuses and all of them, it was a blanket kind of regulation in Australia and in the States. When it hit New South Wales, apparently the couple that owned the school, that had founded the school, that had built the school, that had registered the school, they were banned from their own fucking school because they had the bollocks to say, no, we're not taking the jab. Yeah. So that was, and they were real hardcore.
And it's Steiner. Mad that the Stein, that any Steiner school enforced the vaccine.
Yeah, I think it basically, because I was trying to get to the bottom of how they went about that, and I think they fought tooth and nail to say fuck you to the state, but something to do with just being registered as a school in Australia meant that you were all affected by the legislation, and that made me. But again, that was one of the few instances I heard because, you know, with my contacts back in Perth, I mean, I'm sure there were many people associated with the Steiner and Montessori thing who didn't like it, who had to go under the radar. But for the most part, you know, it was business as usual. Yeah, we'll all band together. But this lot, they really made a stand. And there were certainly kind of guerrilla education groups set up. That's initially how I met a few people in the area, because at the time, around Nimbin and all of that, they had basically called a meeting for residents looking to have their kids educated who were having to do homeschooling. So basically they said, has anyone here got any qualifications in teaching or any experience? You can come forward and you can offer lessons to kids and we'll do this as a community. And obviously everyone knew everyone and they could vet credentials and there could be an exchange of money, but that all had to go on under the radar. And It was an interesting learning curve because I remember attending a few of these meetings, you know, and I mean, my extent of education had been I used to tutor kids for their modern history and English lits leaving exams. So this was more kind of directed towards younger kids. But they said anyone with any skill set, you know, might want to come here and listen. And I was really impressed because it was, I mean, I guess, you know, riffing off what we discussed with Harrison the other day, it was very much a libertarian approach to self-governance. And I thought it was beautiful. And I was really moved by that. It was one of my first experiences coming to the area. And, you know, I came across a number of teachers who were there who were all out of work, who'd turned down the jab. And they said, yep, you know, one of them had taught primary school kids. One of them had been a Steiner teacher. And they'd said, look, we're all out of work, so we're happy to teach your kids.
Yeah.
We'll answer any questions. Here are our credentials. And yeah, I mean, but tying it back to what you were saying, it is very apparent that if you're in a rural area where the mindset and the communities are all capable of saying fuck you to the state, and they're not surrounded by 5G towers and propaganda day in, day out, there's a degree of nature. I think people are going to be far more authentic in their approach to life. Part of, I think, getting us into cities, and we can see it, and listeners out there familiar with the 15-minute city concept that's been trialed around the world. If people are cut off from one another and you're just at home and you're only interacting through a screen and you don't really mix with your mates and you've not moved beyond the 15-minute boundary in a while and you're eating your shit food and you're jabbed to the eyeballs, you know, how are you going to actually muster the strength to like be like, nah, fuck the state, because you're just living in your little bubble? Yeah. So even, you know, as opposed to centralized control as I am, I mean, I have to be in a rural area to really have that mindset and that strength about me. And one of the reasons why I wanted to get the fuck out of Perth was that, I towards the end, you know, moved back in with my mother, who was staying out in the hills in a beautiful place where I remember growing up. And there was access to land and soil under your feet. But, you know, I mean, we had the big debates. I was like, look, I can just move back into home and work cash jobs and you can sit out the requirements. And then, you know, she had to get jabbed because she was in the hospital system and, you know, had all sorts of later health complications there. But I remember thinking to myself, honestly, looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, fucking hell, like, if this goes on for a few years, because we just had no idea how long it was going to go on for, how long until I start thinking, you know, oh, maybe I'll just do this. I mean, I promised myself that I'd rather get a fucking bullet in the head before bastards are going to vaccinate me. Yeah. I think we both, when we met one another and talked about it, were very, very vehement in our positions on it. But I did note, and it was very scary, that obviously you can stand there in your truth, but let's say you've only got your circle of mates and the people you work with, and they slowly erode your position and integrity. And then they, you know, I noticed a lot of people that I was mates with at the start, they were like, fuck it, we're not going to get the jab, or fuck the lockdowns. And then it started affecting their income. And these were people that weren't necessarily, they didn't have kids. Yeah.
Just had to get it because I just needed to go to a wedding. You know,
yes, exactly. I mean, for me, the anger came out. I don't judge anyone who did it for the right reasons to protect their loved ones or they had no other choice. But I knew people who I was having conversations with and then suddenly they'd be like, oh, I want to go to the pub. One of the reasons why I went sober during that period was I was so pissed off that it was like, hey, you want to go have a pint with your mates, have a drink? And I'm like, if that's my fucking price, a pint, you know, I mean, I'll just do my homebrew and sit at home and rage. Yeah. But that's what concerned me. And I think
how many people actually got the jab that were scared of COVID? Almost nobody.
Exactly. That's a very good question. I mean, like, I knew some fuckwits at the start who bought it, but I knew of so many people around my age who didn't have dependents, didn't have family. They got it long before it was required for their workplace. You know, they'd already had the first one. And a lot of it came down to, well, I wanted to go out to a nightclub or I wanted to go to a pub. I was like, is that your fucking price? But then you realize if they're the people that you just mix with all the time and you're listening to their shit getting poured in your ear all the time, it gets really dangerous because we're social animals. So I think you are, you know, it's that old saying, you lie with dogs, you get fleas. You want to have a decent circle of people around you. And I noticed when I came to this area, because this had, I believe, the lowest vaccine uptake in Australia, it was like, I actually, for the first time, I still laugh about this, came across people who at the end of the pandemic and all of the restrictions went under the radar without getting a jab because they were too lazy to even go down and get it. It wasn't that they had a stand. They were just able to live in a rural area. You know, they had cash jobs and they didn't think too much about it. I mean, I remember chatting with this one chap who was like, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't get the vaccine, but it's not because I'm a fucking anti-vaxxer. I looked at him in disbelief. I was like, are you fucking joking? And he goes, yeah, mate, I thought about it, but I just didn't need to get it. And I'm like, I know of people that had to give up everything and drag their possessions out of cities and drive nonstop in the dark.
Yeah.
And this just happened to be an area where, yeah, you could fly under the radar.
Are we the Texas of Australia, do you think?
We are. We are, man. Don't step on me.
Yeah. And we're the Joe Rogan of Australia and Texas. We're not, are we, at all? He's got about a million times more followers than us.
But did you see his first few episodes? They're really heartwarming. When it's like, we might not be Joe Rogan, but we're Ro Jogan. You know, we're doing it on our own terms.
Toby, tying it back to being self-employed, of course, because we like that term. You can't move to a rural area if you're part of a large organisation where you've got to go into fucking York Street in Sydney every day.
Yes.
And it's a more restriction. You can't get onto a bit of land, and which you think you can't. Well, you think you can't do it because you don't want to lose all those friends that you were talking about. Oh, but you won't be able to go to the pub with those friends if you move to a rural area. But you find things are cheaper usually. It's the freedom of having your own business and your own way to make money is what can get you the freedom to get to a place where you're not under the fucking jackboot. One other question I was going to ask you, Toby. How many of the people that you know that have degrees are doing the thing that they went to university to study?
That's a very good question. I was having this discussion with a young man last night over dinner, and who wanted to study astronomy. And I said, go do it, go pursue it. But I said, understand this, that you will, employment-wise, essentially have to finish top of your class and just become an academic in that area. I mean, I'm no expert in astronomy employment, but I mean, having met, I think, one astrophysicist in my life, lovely woman.
That's the lady you've mentioned her before.
Yeah, beautiful girl and a beautiful mind, beautiful face, beautiful body. I probably only know one person in that whole field who studied that undergraduate degree and that master's and then the PhD and then did that. And applying that to all other subjects, I mean, myself as a philosophy major, the only avenues usually available to you when you're doing academic degrees are you then do a master's of teaching in Australia. And then if those subjects are offered in high school, you go and become a teacher, which is a noble profession, or you have to go and basically pursue the honors part of your degree, then do the PhD, and then hope to fucking high heaven there's a position for you in the university lecturing circuit. Which is difficult. I mean, people do it. So to answer your question, from my graduating class, I just know that there were maybe a handful that became teachers, none in my year that necessarily went into academia because there were just too many positions filled, too few positions, and you already have a bunch of people who've been publishing and vying for employment and maybe working as a tutor to even hope to get into that. And you've got to really have a close relationship with the university to go into, or, and this is my one hope, that you basically hope to step out into an arena and write, you know?
Oh, yeah, write, just of write. Course.
Create, yeah, and, write a book. Yes. But there aren't many.
And you, in Australia, will have hocked yourself. When I say you, I'm not saying you have hocked yourself with hex debt.
Yes.
Which is the, and how's that compared to the US, the hex debt in Australia?
Well, coming from someone who's maxed out his hex debt, I can tell you, I'm about $108,000 in debt now.
We've lost you again. Hold on, we've lost him again. Bear with me. Bear with us all while Toby comes back online. We're looking at his little face, staring at us on the thing. Oh, Toby, where have you gone? Are you coming back? Toby, we lost you again. We lost you again. Just after you said you'd maxed yourself out at 100 and something, what was the number?
$108,000. So I think, and counting, because it goes up with inflation. So what I was saying was my approach to higher education was a kind of like, you know, just ride it till it runs out. And I was admittedly at Bond Uni doing business, and then I went to UWA to do a generalized communications degree, and then finally I finished off at the University of Notre Dame, Australia, in philosophy, but I chopped and changed all sorts of units. But I just wanted to surround myself with as much knowledge and people as possible. So I'm probably not the best example of it, but I do know with our hex debts, it does go up. It is kind of index-linked, but in stark contrast to, say, American student loans, to the best of my knowledge, I've never had a credit card. I've been very careful about getting into debt in other areas. I couldn't have given a fuck about my education. But typically speaking, they don't start taking it out of your pay till you're making above. It used to be, I think, $55,000 or $57,000 a year. Then they lowered it, I think, to the high 40s. So there is a compulsory repayment that comes out of my tax each year. But I did find it rather disturbing because it's a pissant amount that goes to pay off the loan. But then given the size of my debt, it then immediately just goes up, you know, each year, each financial year. So
I mean, how's that? Yeah, sorry, keep going. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sure that they'll change the rules around. I mean, I don't think it affects your ability to borrow, to get a home loan now. I don't think it affects your credit rating, but they could always change the legislation. So I, for one, am certainly tied to a massive debt.
It's so mad. How, it's fucked. How is that not a for-profit business? Well, it is.
Yeah. It is.
I mean, that's the motivation to get people to go to university. So that goes to the state, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two different kinds of loans. There's the HECS loan and then there's the fee help loan. And because I went to both public and private unis, the fee help is charged at plus 10 or 15% interest banged onto the actual fee itself.
The government are charging you 10%.
Basically the private institution
that is loaning the money.
Gets it loaned and then they tack on a bit more. So Bond and University of Notre Dame were private institutions and UWA was a public uni. So they tack on a little amount. And it is really creepy when you do think about that because, I mean, of all of those unis, I really, really had a lot of time for my experience at Notre Dame. I loved it, but it's a Catholic uni. And, they have the support of the Catholic Church, which is a very lucrative business.
Yeah.
But what I did find rather disturbing was, I chose to expand my undergraduate degree there from like the normal 3 years. I ended up being there for like 6 years and I loved it. I was just that naughty boy who was just chopping and changing classes and redoing classes and just enjoying it. I mean, I spent most of the time in a bit of an altered state, but I just wanted to be a professional student. And I enjoyed studying with priests. I love that. But what was really sinister, I'm glad that I got to experience my tertiary education face to face. But what was really sinister was that by the end, when they started having the requirements to attend classes come out, because the Catholic Church issued a blanket ban on religious exemptions for vaccines, they were the first universities to decree that everyone needed to be jabbed. And then they had all of this. They were still charging us the same amount while making classes online. Now, luckily, I'd finished my degree, all of my in-person classes, and got the credits to graduate just as all that shit was going down. But I just remember thinking, like, this is the end of an era, And yet they still got their pound of flesh. They still charged us as if we were getting in-person education. But I think you're quite right. It's another way of getting people into debt right off the bat. And I would probably recommend that people, if I had my time again,
I was going to ask you that exact question.
Yeah, they taught me how to read minds. If I had my time again, I would either look at doing maybe, my undergrad and then going into law or teaching afterwards immediately and being very smart about how much money that I gave or how much money I got into debt about, or I would have gone and qualified in a trade and then gone back to uni and then done it for the love of the course while I had my income. And I've met some, like I said before, some extraordinary individuals, particularly doing philosophy, which is not really a course that you go into for employment at the end.
Yeah.
Who were tradespeople who just loved the idea of discussing metaphysics, but they knew that they had their bread and butter covered. And it is unfortunate that we don't live in a society with just free classes and education. I mean, as I understand it, it's a European.
Did they always used to charge? Was a HECS debt always a thing?
No. It used to be free, I think, until the late 1980s. And then fees just increased in their amount. I mean, the HECS system is it's slightly better than making it like the American system where you need to go get a loan, a student loan from these loaning agencies that aren't quite, they're not government based. They can actually go and demand that you pay them back and they can use debt collectors. I think that the HECS just builds up in the background. Like you can, for the time being, you can avoid paying it. But for a very long period, it was free education here. I mean, my mum went up at a time when it was free education. My father went through the University of Aberdeen in Scotland when he went to med school. But in Australia, My mum went to the West Australian Institute of Technology to become a radiographer. That's now Curtin University. And it was, I'm pretty sure at the time that she qualified, it was free.
And she and she then became a radiographer.
She became a radiographer after that. So yeah. She got a diploma in applied sciences. At the time, you could still qualify with a diploma for that in the early 1980s. And it was really good employment. But yeah, it was free for her. And then I think it was the Labor government, ironically, in the 80s that started making it a kind of paid for affair. And then the fees just went up. And I know that there was a big protest that I remember some friends going to in the 2010s about university fees, because one of these individuals who was actually, who was a Laborite originally, I mean, the Liberals had a lot of a hand in this too, you know, they're just as guilty as one another. But this prick was like, yeah, we need to up fees, up costs. And then someone had a photo of him from the late 1980s protesting student union prices, which was like $200 or something back then. And there was the cunt basically trying to tack on another 10 grand to what people had to pay now just to educate themselves. So again, there's an example of our leaders completely backtracking on any semblance of integrity. But it is disturbing to see how things have changed. And Australia has it relatively good in terms of the rules around our HEX. I mean, look, I look at my Australian tax office links to my MyGov thing when I do my tax at the end of the year. And I was shocked to see where my HEX has gone, mainly because I think each person has a maximum of about $100,000 allocated to them to go study certain areas. And I've always thought, it'd be interesting to go back now and study law. I think if I had the means, I'd go do a JD just to have an understanding of the legal framework. Obviously, you know, you can work as a lawyer, and that would be of great interest to me. But I'd be interested more from the perspective of like, how can we navigate this system? So anyone out there want to fund my law degree?
He's run out of HEX.
That's it. I've run out of HEX. But it is a funny one. And I think it's one that I would enjoin any listeners with kids or, you know, younger listeners out there to be very astute with where you're going to go. I mean, I hate saying that because it's very hypocritical of me. I kind of just approach higher learning with just, you know, open yourself and do what you love. And I say do what you love, but also understand that you need to foster a degree of independence in this world. I mean, I work in, I'm on workers' comp right now, but here I am as a very overqualified, service station attendant, working in kitchens, working all sorts of jobs. And I've been very grateful for the experiences that I've had over the years. You know, I've worked with people who don't have a
What's happening again? Toby's, hang on, what's happening? Tobias, come back, Tobias.
You know, on the low end of the earnings.
Oh, we lost you again.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. But you realize that, you know, you've got to be smart about how you generate an income, because if you're going to live outside the long arm of society. I mean, we all need to partake in society to some extent, but, you know, if you don't want to be beholden to, you know, you've got to take your jabs to maintain your food on the table, we've got to be quite smart about it. And I guess in a way I'm somewhat young, but I'm not a child anymore. So I've had to be quite, I've had a steep learning curve about how to maintain self-sufficiency. And I am very grateful for support that I've received, but I would enjoin listeners out there, if you've got kids, you know, get them really sharp on the basic things. Get a bit of savings going. Yeah. Get the idea of a weekly budget broken down. Look at different forms of employment, and also look at jobs that are going to maintain their staying power, because AI and all these other developments are coming out. So I think a trade is not a bad idea, but obviously that's subject to change as well.
The trade thing as well is you're limited to your own sort of man hours, basically. Or woman hours, if anyone's going to get offended by that. No, but if you're a carpenter, sparky, barber, You can only charge an hourly rate for your own time. So you have to be thinking bigger picture. How do I sort of make that a scalable business where you can step away from it and still have money coming in? Like, so trade's amazing. I mean, having a trade is so much better than working in fucking investment banking, which is just a farce that you're working in an industry about money. It's so mental. But having a trade, I think, as well, as useful as that is, you're still going to be on the breadline because you can only just afford, you know, it's whatever your hourly, whatever your exchange of your hourly rate is for your labor. So, yeah, so that's an important thing to remember, I think. I was going to say something else. I forgot what it was. I was trying to look up.
It's good. You mentioned barbering. It was one thing that, because I got offered an apprenticeship when I came over here and was looking for a job in hairdressing. And because I read somewhere in a short story where everyone was being replaced by automation, the one area where they still hadn't trained robots was to cut hair without cutting people. So I thought maybe there's something to this. And on a kind of split second decision, I thought I'll apply for this job. And I always like discussing income with people in different areas. And what was interesting is, and this ties into what you were saying, the people who ran this fantastic hairdressing salon in Byron Bay, they said, look, the real money doesn't lie in working as a hairdresser or a barber. And they talked about the hourly rate. They said the real money lies in getting your own salon. And that's a license to print money. Again, you become the business owner. Yeah. And there were some really interesting figures there. And look, I eventually got offered another job, which gave me a little bit more, far more money for the hourly rate. But I always like having experiences where I go into different industries and I chat with people in that industry. But the one thing that really shines is you've got to have side hustles. You've got to run your own business in a way.
Yeah.
And that way, when the hammer comes down and the new legislation is set, you have to behave in this way. You can say, fuck you. You know, I'm not going to do that. And my employees are not going to do that. But that requires a lot of grit. I mean, obviously, it doesn't just happen overnight.
And kids have this tendency to get obsessed. They don't even get obsessed by it. If I think back to when I was younger, it was like I picked something I thought I wanted to be for no reason other than it was a whimsical choice. And then suddenly, as you do as a kid, you're just like, you hyper-focus. Oh, that's what I want to be. I want to be that. I want to be that. From about the age of 9, it's like, it's just fucking, it's unrealistic. That's not something that's going to necessarily make you a living. And I think the parents then facilitate it. A little bit.
Yes. There is something very beautiful about this idea of like, be what you want to be. I think that's really good. I always tell people who are studying, you know, I'm like, pursue what you want to pursue, but take it from me as someone who did that, that you will also, assuming that you don't get what you want from that pursuit, you're still going to have to put food on the table. You're still going to have to pay rent. You've got all the bills. You're going to have to survive. And you know, there are moments, and look, it's taught me to be humble in certain ways, but there are moments where, you know, I work a lot of, low income, low skill jobs. And, you know, you're dealing with the great unwashed and you get a lot of wankers and you've got to answer to a lot of fuckwits. And you're like, I always say to people, I'm like,
you get a broken back.
Do what you love. Do what you love. But also understand that you need to have a hustle. And it's only in my 30s that that's really coming back to teach me. And, I don't regret a lot, but there are certain things that I would change and I would certainly have a healthier approach to money. I mean, you don't want money to dominate your life, but at the same time, you can't pretend that it isn't an important factor in fostering independence. And I think, you know, Harrison, who we talked with, you know, earlier this week, he's a guy who's very clever in, you know, working for businesses and working on his own terms. And he really practices that libertarian philosophy, which is, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, we should all live outside the arm of government. It's another thing to actually practice it. And it requires that you use that brain and the thought, feeling and action to manifest those results in a really practical way. So Dale, I'm going to be your understudy.
Happy to help, Tobias. We've been an hour and 7 minutes, I think. Well, that wasn't even what we were going to talk about, was it? Because you had looked at stuff.
It was great. It was actually really good because what I can talk about, I can save for a major episode. For anyone out there, what we were going to talk about is Robert Monroe's gateway experience and astral projection. This is really good because the way that he got into this was starting self-help and self-education tapes and selling those. So we can save that for a later program.
That is
really interesting. and how the CIA overlaps with that is a bit of an occult one. But this has been good. I enjoy this. I enjoy that because this is something that's actually been on my mind of late as I've been sitting recovering, this idea of fostering independence. Yeah. And I've talked with a lot of people who are, you know, vaccine objectors, and they're now looking to transition out of professional work into other areas and follow what they love. And it's always inspiring when I come across that. It really is inspiring. And, you know, it gives me the strength to realize, okay, you know, you're on the right path here. You're on the right path. So I think that it's an important message to leave on, especially given that libertarianism was the subject of our main program this week for episode number 32. And this being episode 16 of Bonus Shiz, divide 32 by 2 and you get where we're at here. But, yeah, you've got to foster that. You've got to live life on your own terms. And you've got to be smart about it.
Take a risk. Yeah, take a risk before you leave it too late and then you've got too many commitments and it's hard to do it. There you go. Look, if one person listens to that and goes, you know what? You're fucking right. I'm going to fucking make a start doing it tomorrow. I'm doing it tomorrow. Well, don't do it tomorrow. Do it today, okay? There's plenty of hours left by the time I've got this up. I'm going to click the stop button, Tobias. I'm going to click the stop button.
Adios.
All right, see you later. Yeah, bye.